This past week, part of my sermon prep was informed by that great theologian, Johnny Cash. Can I get a witness? Perhaps you've heard that quote, "There was Johnny Cash, then there was everybody else." The man in black. I wasn't always a big Johnny Cash fan, but over the past 10 years, I've fallen in like with some of his songs. He does a great rendition of Danny Boy, which I love. It's just soothing and haunting at the same time. And then he did that song that actually got him nominated for a VH1 award and a Grammy award. It was called Hurt. It was a Nine Inch Nails song that he did a cover of. But this week, the song was a 1990 song called Redemption. And one of the stanzas from Redemption goes like this. From the tree streamed a light that started the fight. Round the tree grew a vine on whose fruit I could dine. My old friend Lucifer came, fought to keep me in chains, but I saw through the tricks of 666. For about a month now, we've been walking through the Gospel of Mark, chapter 1. And this gospel writer has been on this restoration demon-chasing rampage. It's the year 60 CE, and Mark wants his hearers to know that Nero's evil empire, bloodthirsty Christian-killing ways will not be the final word amongst the early church. Powers and principalities, Lucifer and your bag of tricks, you will be destroyed. Jesus Christ, the Son of God, proclaims the good news. The time is fulfilled. The kingdom of God has come near. Keep on turning your hearts towards me, says Jesus, and believe. And Mark doesn't stop with declarations about Jesus. He then tells stories of Jesus. This Jesus who's bringing the good news to life through real people. Andrew, Simon, the Zebedee brothers, Jesus saying to them, follow me and I will make you fish for people. And fish they did. All kinds of people were being drawn into the net of this ragtag, blue-collar community of Jesus freaks. People astounded by the power and presence of this carpenter's son who taught with an authority that was unlike the scribes. He rebukes demons that have inhabited people's lives for years. Be silent, unclean spirit. Come out of him, cries the carpenter's son. And the oppressive spirits are released. Jesus stirring up things in the local synagogue, but also pushing out oppression, despair, and disease in the neighborhoods. Hoping to find some Sabbath rest at Simon's mother-in-law's house on a Sabbath afternoon, instead, he finds a woman in deep distress. Overcome and undone by the sickness that has plagued her for weeks, no relief, she's weak, she's distraught, she's unable to do the things she loves, the things that give her purpose. She's unable to offer care and kindness to family and friends. And so Jesus sees how her unwellness takes away her honor and her dignity. He takes her by the hand. He raises her up from her bed of sorrows. And the spirit of heaviness is banished. She responds by worshiping. And her act of worship is serving the one who saves her. But it's not all tea and crumpets, because darkness falls and Sabbath ends and the locals have figured out where Jesus is. They carry their sick and demon-possessed to the door of Simon's mother-in-law's place. Imagine a sea of 400 or 500 people cramming around the doorway of her first century bungalow. Heal me, Jesus. Save me, Jesus. Here's my brother. Release my sister. She's possessed by a demon that won't let her go. Jesus presses through the crowds, taking people by the hand, raising them up, healing them, speaking to unclean spirits. "Be silent, come out of her," he cries. This requesting and releasing and relinquishing goes on for hours. But alas, Jesus too gets weary. He fights his way back to Simon's mom's place, and she crams the door shut against the mob. Jesus sleeps off a hard day's work, but then in the morning disappears into the early morning shadows. The disciples wake up and Jesus is gone. For hours they hunt for him. It's not until they widen the search to the rural hills of Galilee that they find him, and Simon finds him first. Simon, with his impulsive, hot-headed reaction, tears a strip off gentle Jesus. "What are you doing? You keep telling us to fish for people, and now you're in the middle of nowhere. You losing your power? If you're losing it, I'm heading back to my boat to get things done." But then Simon, imagine, tries to compose himself. "Don't you know how worried we were about you? Why do you treat us like this? Everyone is searching for you." Jesus looks at Peter with eyes of mercy. "Let's go to the neighboring towns so that I may proclaim the message there. For that is what I came to do." And we read that they went throughout Galilee, following Jesus as he proclaimed the message in synagogues and cast out demons throughout the surrounding regions. This gospel writer, Mark, is really on a mission. A couple of weeks ago, I said that he uses the word immediately over 40 times in 16 chapters. Immediately, immediately, immediately. He can't wait to tell us the story of Jesus. And perhaps this is because he's in the midst of persecution and oppression. There's no time for flowery stories. It's just the facts, just core truths, just the promises. Take it and run with it, people, and know that Jesus is with you, fighting demons and powers that seek to destroy you, empowering you to be bearers of good news. And last week, in the midst of all this casting out demon action, we talked about how we might overcome evil with good. And we even listed some of the powers and principalities that loom against us. Consumerism, entitlement, self-centeredness, addiction, religious supremacy, dehumanization, exploitation, bigotry, fear, despair, racism. You fill in the blank, all these powers and principalities that we're actually immersed in week after week. And we are called to overcome evil. And this story tells us that the evil is not just out there, the cosmic forces that we fight. But today's story narrows the focus to a known house with a known floor plan with known names. Jesus entering in to a house, coming alongside the bed of a friend's mother-in-law. Jesus takes her by the hand, raises her up. And for some reason, Mark doesn't give us any words of what Jesus did. He didn't anoint her with oil. He didn't say a prayer. He didn't pull out his Gideon psalm book and quote a psalm. He was simply with her. He must have said something, but it's left to our imagination to fill in the blank. But I think it gives us pause, gives us a reason to reflect, to think about that person or that house that we might enter into, that person that we might be called to be present to this week. Because it's in these places, too, that voices of shame and the presence of the demonic and darkness abound. The oppressive spirits dwell in houses and homes and hallways, maybe even in the houses of our own hearts and minds. And I'm not trying to be spooky and outlandish here, but I am saying that as we follow Jesus into the neighborhoods of our lives, we have this opportunity to be the voice and the presence of Jesus. So we enter in. Perhaps we take someone by the hand and we raise them up and restore their dignity. Perhaps we'll speak words that echo the heart of Jesus. Beloved daughter, beloved son, in you I am pleased. God's faithful servant, God's beloved. Or maybe we echo the words that Jesus would have known and prayed himself. We've heard the words from Isaiah, and Jesus would have known the stories and words of Isaiah. Do you not know? Have you not heard? God gives power to the faint and strengthens the powerless. We can be those people, those voices, those words and presence. I was listening to one prison chaplain this past week who says, we can be sacramental witnesses, visible signs of an invisible reality. Visible signs of an invisible reality. As a prison chaplain, he talks about people who've never heard someone say, I love you. Look them in the eye and simply say, I love you. We probably know people who don't hear that enough. Maybe they've heard it once or twice, but maybe they haven't heard it lately. And so let's enter into those places this week, being the words in the heart and the presence of Jesus, pushing back the presence of the enemy and being people of light and love, forgiveness and grace. And we don't do this in our own strength. That's why we gather in this place week after week, month after month around this table, worshiping, being fed by the bread and the cup of Christ so that the Spirit of Christ might fill us and go with us anew. So hopefully we follow Jesus to quiet places. I love that part of today's story too, when he just disappears. There's people clamoring and crying out for him, but what does Jesus do? He disappears to that solitary, quiet place. In the midst of all the voices, in the midst of all the drama, in the midst of all the people begging him to be there, he disappears. And I think for some of us, this place, this sanctuary becomes a place to disappear to on Sundays. And your calendar or your day planner, or people might go, what in the world are you doing? And you say, I need to be here. I need to be in this place because there's something that I get in this place and in this people that I can't get anywhere else in the world. And so we come away to this place, this table. We come to the table of the Lord where we are fed, where we are nourished, and we recognize that Jesus, our healer, Jesus, our redeemer, Jesus, the one who restores us, fills us anew as we seek to be restorers in the world. So today I invite you in the quietness as we continue to prepare our hearts for our time at the table to allow God to love you first, for you to hear, yes, you are my beloved son, you are my beloved daughter, and you I am well pleased. And we will together then be renewed and filled to push back the powers of darkness. We cling to the words of Jesus who says, take courage, be strong of heart, for lo, I have overcome the world.